This is the Crime Story Podcast with Carrie Ann Tholis, where stories of crime and justice are told. On today's podcast, we continue our crime story series, Inside the Robe. Catherine Mader spent two decades as a judge in Los Angeles Criminal Court before retiring early in 2020. In August of last year, Judge Mader published Inside the Robe, a judge's candid tale of criminal justice in America, which best-selling author Michael Connelly called, quote, a perfect book, engrossing and telling at the same time, end quote. The judges granted Crime Story permission to excerpt the entirety of her book over the coming months. In part 31 of Inside the Robe, Judge Mader takes us through a series of drug cases and explores the complex pressures that a judge faces in navigating the tactics of prosecution and defense counsel. You can find this excerpt in written form at crimestory.com.
March 1st. The female nurse caretaker I wrote about on January 25th was before me again this morning. She was accused of embezzling over $1 million from a 101-year-old victim. She hired one of the best criminal defense attorneys and, in negotiations with the prosecutor, whittled her maximum sentence down from close to 20 years in state prison to the current maximum of 8. This case will go to trial soon. The defense attorney, who has appeared before me in other serious cases, asked me for an indicated sentence. In other words, he wants me to evaluate the case and consider undercutting the prosecutor's offer. I said, I don't have much sympathy for a woman who fleeced her elderly patient. I'd probably give her not less than 5 or 6 years in state prison, especially since the nurse used her patient's money to build a house in Mexico and will never pay the money back. I like this criminal defense attorney. He is about my age, curly grayish hair, fit, smart, and reminds me of my husband, Norman. He is friendly and flattering towards me, and I'm not sure it's because he wants something from me or genuinely likes me. It's hard for a judge to evaluate any attorney's sincerity. Almost everyone in the courthouse is nice, even obsequious to judges. Prosecutors' recommended sentences for stealing often are motivated by whether the defendant can repay the stolen money. That makes me irate. Understandably, victims want their money back. They want a defendant to stay out of custody and work to return stolen money instead of being locked up. Prosecutors often oblige. I feel tugged from both sides. Poor defendants who steal large amounts of money are usually sent to prison. The victim will never be repaid. Other defendants promise to work hard to repay the victims, stay out of custody, but the victim never gets repaid. The penalties for stealing large amounts of money are low. The highest term for grand theft is 3 years served at 50%. Even if the value, as here, is over $1 million, only 4 extra years at 50% can be added. After months of haggling, I sent a second case out for trial this morning. Two defendants, once married to each other, with no criminal records, ran a marijuana dispensary. Their teenage son lived with them during that period. Confusing regulations abound for the marijuana business. These defendants, however, were operating outside the law. Concentrated cannabis and manufacturing materials were found throughout the house where the family lived. Along with drug offenses, they were also charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, their teenage son. This case had been through at least 6 different prosecutors, most likely because no one was eager to try a dispensary case. Similar to another case I described on January 27th, this male defendant also has cancer. A note in the trial prosecutor's file from Rob, the DA supervisor, again ordered, do not settle this case without the head deputy's approval. The prosecution's offer is lenient toward the female defendant. She may plead guilty to a misdemeanor, a minor charge, attend 1 year of parenting classes, and then have her case dismissed. She wants the offer, but she's not allowed to accept it unless her ex-husband also accepts the offer made to him. prosecutors often insist that co-defendants plead as a quote-unquote package. They want to avoid one defendant taking the deal and later testifying at their co-defendant's trial that the co-defendant had nothing to do with the crime. Should that happen and a jury find a co-defendant not guilty, the prosecution cannot go back and prosecute the first defendant for lying to help the second defendant on the witness stand. The husband's attorney hated his client's offer. Your Honor, my client can't plead guilty to 1 year in the county jail. It's a death sentence for him, considering his cancer treatments. Everybody knows that the medical care in the jail is horrendous. Isn't there something you can do? I already had been burned once by Rob for suggesting an attorney go over his head to get a better offer. 1 year in jail was not in line with other sentences in marijuana dispensary cases. As I wrote on January 27th, I knew I wouldn't be as aggressive in fighting for the next marijuana defendant, and I did feel ashamed. I suggested a new approach. Why don't you offer to have your client agree to spend his 180 days in a private jail? That way he could get his medical treatments. These are jails connected with small city police departments that are much cleaner and safer for someone without a criminal record. Private jails are a source of revenue for small cities and charge around $3,000 a month for the privilege of sleeping in their cells. I cannot imagine why Rob would object to a defendant with cancer spending his custody time in a city jail. I'm such a hypocrite. I just complained that a well-heeled theft defendant should not be able to avoid jail by paying back all the funds he stole. Now I'm suggesting that a marijuana dispensary defendant with money avoid the crowded and filthy county jail by paying $3,000 a month for a private jail cell. What about a poor person with cancer? When I was younger, I would stew about these inequities and chatter to everyone around me about how upset they made me. Now I just move on. My narcotics trial lumbers along. No question the defendant's son's house was a stash pad where massive amounts of meth and heroin were packaged for sale. The house even had a dozen red cylindrical fire extinguishers cut lengthwise, exposing the meth smuggled inside them. There were also large yellow cans of menudo, a Mexican staple, stuffed with meth, some opened and others sealed as though they just arrived from the cannery. The only issue is whether the defendant knew what his son was doing and whether he was an integral member of the conspiracy.
That concludes part 31 of Inside the Robe by Catherine Mader. The audio was edited by Jody O'Keefe. For more storytelling news and narrative analysis from the world of crime and justice, head on over to crimestory.com. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next Crime Story podcast.